Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me as always, the Muti to my Meta and the Gamma to my Zeta, it's Dan.
Good morning, Scott. How's it going?
It's going okay. Yes, we're back to recording in the post-midnight hours, but what's kind of cool is that tonight we're dropping the needle down on a, I guess we'd call it a surprise podcast, because we didn't tell anyone we were going to do this.
Yeah. Well, normally we don't plan, normally we have an idea months ahead of time before we're going to do something, but this just kind of snuck up on us and decided to do it for the hell of it. So.
Right. I think the bigger surprise is that we hadn't planned on doing this all along.
Yeah.
So to be clear, in case anyone didn't see the podcast description before they, clicked play, we are here to talk about the series premiere of Legion. And I'm going to say that the thing that caught our eyes and ears with this series has little to nothing to do with the whole superhero connection or anything to do with the whole Marvel TV output, which I personally feel can veer from watchable but mostly forgettable like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to the wildly overrated second coming of Arrow known as Daredevil. I do give props to 2/3 of Luke Cage and at least 3/4 of Jessica Jones. But and I know you can't comment on some of this because you haven't seen all of us.
No, sometime, maybe.
Sometime in the future. But what was really the first reason I think we gave two figgity fudgety fracks about this show? Dan?
Yeah, it would be our love for, our actually very strong love for Fargo and its creator, Noah Hawley, who has not let us down so far, be it in two seasons of Fargo or the book that I bought by him that was quite good, or this.
Yeah, I mean, when we heard that this man was doing a show, we thought a superhero show. I was like, okay, that's interesting. It took me back to when you first were like, Christopher Nolan is going to do a Batman movie. And it's like, wait, the guy who did Memento is going to do a Batman movie? And I think he might have pulled off something as, groundbreaking in this genre as what Nolan did back then. Hey, you know what? Just to be clear to anyone listening, this is not going to be a spoiler-free podcast. So if for some bizarre reason you haven't watched Legion yet, but you decided to listen to this podcast, I would advise you to put the sucker on pause right now. Go track down Legion on demand or wherever the heck you're going to find it at this point. Watch it. Then come back and listen to us prattle on about it, because I don't think we're never going to be spoiler free with something like this, right? Nah.
No, I don't think are we going to go out of our way to spoil comic related stuff to this, or doesn't there, I don't know if anybody.
I mean, there, I'm going to leave
probably,
that.
Yeah,
I'm going to leave that in your hands because I have little to no familiarity with the comic book origins of this character other than a couple very basic things, such as, even the title of the show, which is Legion, which is really taken from the fact that I guess his character in the comics is called Legion because of the multitude of personalities in his head, which could, refer to his unique multiple personality disorder or schizophrenia or whatever, but no one actually calls him Legion, at least not yet in this series. But I think if you want to bring up a couple comic book things, I'm not worried about that being spoilery. I mean, unless you think it could be something they'll explore on the show, in which case, I don't want to spoil like future episodes.
Yeah, from what I've read of this character doing in the comics, there's 0% chance any of that's going to happen in this show.
Excellent. All right, so I don't want to go totally recap crazy here, because again, people who are listening have already seen the show, so I'm just going to try to nutshell it as best I can, so I'll give it a shot right now. Oh, by the way, I could listen to that, in a loop over and over for this whole podcast as far as I'm concerned. I really love that song.
Yeah, it's going to be stuck in my head for days now, which is okay because it doesn't suck at all.
Absolutely. So what we have here is the story of David Haller, whatever. He's a patient at the Clockworks Mental Hospital. He's been diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic, prone to delusions, hallucinations, and especially a cacophony of voices in his head. He meets a fellow patient named Sid Barrett, which should thrill every old school Pink Floyd fan out there. And despite the fact she refuses to be touched, she consents to be his girlfriend. But something goes more than a little bit wrong on the day she's about to be released, and David can't stop himself from kissing her, which sets some havoc into motion. Bodies are switched, walls are replaced, doors inside the asylum, and a friend of David's, Lenny, who we loved seeing because it was Aubrey Plaza, she actually gets fused into the wall and is killed. Somehow, beyond bodies being just switched, places seem to be switched as well, and David is free. Now, a lot of what we end up learning comes through an interrogation of David by who he initially thinks are some cops, but we see are something far more sinister and conspiratorial. They know David isn't simply crazy, or maybe not crazy at all, but he does possess incredible power, telekinesis of the highest magnitude, and they will even kill him if need be. By the end, we see that David is on the run with Sid and others who appear to be trying to help him, but the most important thing for David, and maybe for the viewer as well, is this real? And yeah, that's my quickie little recap. Told you I was going to be fast about it this time, because I figured we can get into the nuts and bolts of what we enjoyed and what we were wondering about as we talk about it. So let's start right off with how I ended that. One of the big questions of the show is this real? You know, they do more than simply cutting between fantasy and reality. I think quite often you can't be sure which is which. And we also tend to lose sense of time and continuity as well, which I think achieves what Noah Hawley is going for here. It achieves a very dreamlike feeling for a lot of this episode. At least I thought that was the point, the way I was doing it.
Yeah, it's deliberately disjointed, but I think that kind of makes you a little bit more empathetic with the character, because it's just like, okay, I mean, you know, we can barely tell what's going on. We can definitely see why this guy would be freaked out.
Right. It actually has at least, at the very least, a dual purpose, because what you just said, absolutely, because we do get his, we are getting his POV, which, you're right, makes us empathetic to the character, but also the unsettling and disorienting nature of it, it kind of keeps us on edge for a lot of the episode. So even if, quote unquote, maybe not a lot transpires at certain points, we constantly feel that at any moment something can go horribly, horribly wrong, you know, which is really excellent, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen this kind of thing before, where, like, you know, we can't tell what reality, what is reality and what isn't, and sometimes it can get a little annoying. But this kind of felt fresh to me, so I think that if they continue to use that kind of thing, which I'm not sure if they're going to lean on super heavily, as much so in the pilot as they do in future episodes, but I think it as a you know it's working for this show.
Right. I mean, I agree. I suspect that after this point, the episodes may tend to be somewhat more, I hate to say ever say grounded, you know, because I'm sure they will be, they will have their bouts of trippiness, but I think that might be put more to the extreme in this episode, because it's really introducing us to this character and the world or the world inside his brain, quite frankly, here. I think that'll be lessened throughout the series. I don't know that for a fact, because we're not professional critics, so we didn't get to see like the first four episodes in advance like some people get to. Bastards.
Yeah, but yeah, it is FX, so if Noah Hawley wants to just be like a complete freaking psycho and just have the show be just endless crazy cutting and unknown reality stuff, I think, you know, they'd let him do it. But
right.
At least if he does it won't be just like endless shitty montages and like overlong crap.
Like certain other FX shows have been.
Yep.
Well, another thing, and getting to what you were just saying about how Hawley's going to treat this show, because even if I don't know if he's going to direct any of the other episodes of the season. I don't think so. But he did direct this one. And oh, by the way, good Lord, this is only the second thing he's ever directed, other than the second episode of season two of Fargo.
I thought he did more than that, but I must supposed to be thinking of him like singing like a bunch of songs on Fargo. So
that must be it. That's astounding, because yeah. this this is a tour de force as far as I'm concerned, because there's so much going on here. And it's usually ideal if you can actually have, the writer and director, creator, whatever, all together, doing an episode of television. Typically, that's going to be something special. You know, it's just like when we would watch, a Mad Men episode that we knew that Matt Weiner both wrote and directed, or, stuff that Vince Gilligan has done, or even Sam Esmail with Mr. Robot. Although he kind of, him doing an entire season made that somewhat less special, but it was still impressive.
Yeah.
But here...
I like how, you can tell that Noah Hawley has obviously been paying attention to, the good directors that they've had on the show, Fargo before, and, even though he's probably really, really busy writing these really, really good scripts, but the fact that he took the time to, just learn from these people and make sure to do a good job at the directing process, too, it's just, makes me a little bit more respect for him, because I'm sure it must be a long day doing all this stuff and then still trying to understand the basics behind doing this as well.
Right. And especially, and if he was doing a show that was more... more straightforward in its storytelling. And that doesn't mean a bad show. It could be a brilliant show. It could be a Breaking Bad, for that matter. But Breaking Bad is going to be told in a certain way. I mean, there may be use of a flashback or two, but it's usually a very linear form of storytelling, or at least circular, where this goes beyond that. I mean, just the editing alone is noteworthy in this episode. The editor got made. I'm sure Hawley was in the editing booth, watching how that was being put together, because that was so important in this episode. I mean, Kelly Dixon must have been applauding, speaking of editors when she watched this. Mm. Another thing that's really wonderful about it is that, at first you're watching this and it's, it's kind of subtle, but it's kind of trippy sci-fi at first. And I felt that Noah Hawley was really doubling down on a lot of Kubrickian touches, which is not a bad thing. I mean, if you're gonna pay homage to someone, a great director, you don't get much better than Kubrick, quite frankly. But then at a certain point, it kind of becomes more like a paranoid thriller right out of the 1970s or something. And what it reminded me of, and I think you probably felt the same way, it kind of reminded me of how season 2 of Fargo was a fusion of multiple genres at different times, depending on the story or the mood or whatever. And I kind of think they were doing that with the show as well.
Yeah, I had the same thought a couple times during it as I watched it.
I know when we've talked about shows in the past, whatever the show is, it could be, like the ones we've already mentioned, or even it could be something like Game of Thrones, whatever. Both of us, and you especially, like to focus occasionally on something like the composition of certain shots, if they really do something that's really different, or just whenever someone elevates TV to a more of a cinematic feel, because we know they do that. We know they've done that on shows like a Mr. Robot, I think, or even a handful of different HBO shows at times. But I felt with this episode, especially during that first. Good gosh, definitely during that first half hour or so, it really, for me, was so gorgeous to look at, and I was just spellbound. I was like, this is not just TV. I mean, not to use HBO's old line, but this is not TV. This is, holy shit, this is something special I'm watching here.
Oh yeah, it's definitely a beautiful looking show, and the way that they have the colors just pop, in contrast against each other, it just makes the whole thing feel just, really surreal.
Surreal is, yeah, it's a very surreal show. That's true.
But still, vibrant, a lot of sensory stuff's going on too, which I think, also works out with the subject matter.
Yeah, there's so much going on. I mean, you mentioned color, and that's something that people rarely focus on when we talk about things, but it can be very noteworthy with a lot of shows that we've talked about over the years. Again, Breaking Bad was very known for its color palette and how they did that. Mad Men did that as well. The colors on this show are eye-popping, but you start thinking they have a certain meaning to them. They have a certain, whether it's a tone or an attitude or just, to set the mood a lot of times. It's Yeah, I again, it's just something I wasn't expecting. I mean, I know I saw the ads for the show, but I didn't focus on them too much. My bad.
Yeah, but
So.
well, there's a lot of stuff going on right now, TV wise and in general. So, it's easy to see how something like this could split through the slip, slip through the cracks. Just because we've really been bombarded with lots of good to great TV for quite a long time now. So,
Yeah.
we don't have to feel too bad that
I
we
don't.
didn't get.
Hey, one of my favorite things about the last couple of years is it's nice when there's a show that you know about well in advance and you're looking forward to and actually ends up being good. Good or great. Like Happen Lettered last year was a show I knew about several months in advance and I enjoyed it. It was a good show. Maybe not great, but very good. I'm looking forward to the next season. I'm hoping that one's at least very good.
Right.
But then you might have a show which you didn't hear about until literally the day it came out on Netflix or something like that. Like last year, I know you haven't seen it yet, but like Stranger Things was that kind of a show. Or to a lesser extent, because I didn't like the final episode, the OA was that kind of a show. This is one that was, I mean, we knew Legion was coming out. But I will confess, I had kind of forgotten about the Noah Hawley connection for a while. I was just thinking of it being a Marvel X-Men related TV show. So I was like, And then it might have been you or someone else reminded me that it was Noah Hawley some time ago. And I was like, oh my God, that's right. That's such a weird, like, that just sounds so weird just hearing you say that. I gotta put that on my, gotta put that on the radar. We gotta check that one out. It doesn't even make sense that I had low expectations because it was Noah Hawley was involved. I had like medium expectations, so I like that it's still one above them. Oh, so we were talking about things like the look of the show and whatever. Let's not forget the sound of the show. I mean for our experience with Fargo should have told us this as well that they're going to pick some neat music for the show and hey, we riffed on it before the fact that they used. The little Happy Jack for that montage in the beginning, which pretty much goes through David's entire childhood right up until the point where he gets committed, I guess.
Yeah, that was a really effective, instead of having a bunch of exposition, it was a really nice way to just kind of bring you up to speed as to what's going on a little bit.
Yes, I like it was done in, and I feel like we saw something like that once on a Fargo episode. It seems really familiar to me, but I can't quite. Pluck the file out of my head to like point to what I'm talking about, or maybe I'm thinking of, I might be thinking of that near the end of the second season when one of the characters is kind of recounting their lives or the future lives or something. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of actually. But I also thought it was interesting because you're watching the show, which has its roots in, it's got the sci-fi thing, it's got the superhero thing, fantasy, etc., and everything what I mentioned before. But then you have these sequences like that montage with Happy Jack, and then later on, I was so excited to hear the song. They use She's a Rainbow, the old Rolling Stones song. Perfect. Mwah! Perfect use of it,
Yeah,
whatever.
we don't hear the stone super often on TV, so it's nice when it's used and used well.
I agree. I like when it's a Stone song that's over, it's not an overused one. Like,
Yeah, I've
does it
always liked this song, but it's not like overplayed.
There's a couple Stone songs which I was like, okay, I never need to hear that song used in any movie or TV show because it's there are certain go-to songs just to set a mood. Like Gimme Shelter has been used. That's been used on some TV shows from way back as well as a lot of movies. It's like I love Gimme Shelter. Never need to hear it again on a TV or movie or Sympathy for the Devil or things like that. This I thought just worked so nicely. And I thought it was interesting because both of those choices have that very kind of 60s retro feel. And I remember thinking while I was, especially during Happy Jack, and then when I heard the opening strains of She's a Rainbow, I was thinking, oh, I was busy talking about Stanley Kubrick here, and then Noah Hawley goes and he gets all Wes Anderson on us. Because these are very much the kind of musical choices you see Wes Anderson making in his movies. So
Yeah,
I thought he kind
they're
of.
fun and whimsical and just a little off balance.
Yeah, and I loved doing that because going into the show, I don't think I, other than the Hawley connection, I wasn't really expecting much in the way of whimsical.
No.
Even when I heard a little bit about, oh, he's a guy who's got multiple personalities and people think he's crazy. Like, okay, that sounds like it'll be really cute. No, didn't think that at all.
Yeah, I definitely wasn't expecting a dance number towards the end, so
Oh my
that
God.
was.
That just came out, that so came
Yeah.
out of nowhere for me. I was just like, okay, this is the kitchen sink episode, but I'm loving it. That's just
Yeah.
crazy.
Well, yeah, and it's the kind of thing that, they like to jam into, like, American Horror Story, and at this point, it just kind of feels so tired when it shows up on a show like that. But for this, it's just like, okay, this is kind of nuts, but it worked.
Well, I think they really made the most of the conceit of the show being, you're dealing with a main character who you're not for a while, or maybe throughout the episode, you're not sure if he's all there. You don't know, because like I said, the question of the show quite often is, what is real? Are we seeing things just from his point of view? And if we are, is this real or is it his delusions? Because, he's been diagnosed as someone with delusions and hallucinations and all that other stuff. Is that what we're seeing here? I mean, I kind of think the musical number is. I'm
Yeah.
pretty sure that wasn't really happening.
Yeah.
But I love that being kind of an overriding question and theme throughout the episode. Now, if that turns out to be the case for all 8 episodes, that could be trying. I don't know, but we'll wait and see. But for this one
Wait.
episode,
Right. Well, yeah, it's hard to get invested in something and stay invested if you just don't know what's real and what's not constantly. I mean, there has to be something, at least one thing that we think is real. So I'm
right.
pretty sure that they'll, it'll zero in on something and then it'll end up, we'll be okay with it.
Well, I think what I think the key, one of the key mo the key moment in the episode was at the very end or towards the very end when they're on the run and he stops with Sid and the thing he needs to know is this real? And she confirms that this is real. And I like that that's kind of echoes back to earlier in the episode when he's talking to her and she tells him, "No, I'm not real. I'm just being projected in your head. This isn't really happening. You're actually, and here she says, "No, now I'm real. This is actually happening." So we have to have faith in the filmmakers here, and Noah Hawley and the writers that, okay, they're telling us that specifically. I'm gonna have to hold them to their word. I have to assume the rest of this isn't going to be, we're not gonna watch an 8 episode long version of The Usual Suspects or something. You're like, oh, it's all fake now. So,
I
oh.
kind of enjoy it, and I find it once again refreshing that while they're presenting us with the fact that, like, yeah, this is a really unreliable narrator. I mean, some of the stuff isn't real, and they're not saving it for some fucking big twist. Do something like Westworld and then just act like, oh, this is an amazing twist. Internet didn't fucking know this 10 weeks ago, but look at how great we are. No, this is just like, okay, this is what's going on. Love it or leave it.
I know it's totally not fair and not even they're not even there's no reason to compare the two, but I will tell you right now as I'm watching this, as I was watching it, I think it was maybe 40 minutes, I almost went online during a commercial break and said, I think this is kicking Westworld's ass right now.
Yeah.
Why? It's not like they're both. It's not like they're covering the same material. There's no reason for me to say that. But in my mind, I was like, "But you know what? I will say, which is a fair comment to make. This is the kind of pilot premiere episode I think something like Westworld should have had, because this excited me throughout it, and not just based on it looking really good.
Yeah.
Because you know what they did that Westworld didn't do? And what you were talking about earlier. We get invested in this character and we care about him from the get-go as the story plays out. And that is so important.
And I didn't really know. I mean, I didn't have any expectations about that, but, like, based on what I know of what I've seen of the comic character, I mean, the character in the comic is just kind of fucking stupid. Pardon my English, but it's just, not the coolest character, and,
Is that our first?
basically the only time he's ever done anything interesting was just, like, as a catalyst to, like, create the big Age of Apocalypse storyline, which was kind of cool. But the character in itself was just, like, a complete, just not super compelling, but this character is.
Oh, but by the way, just for the record, was that the first F-bomb of the podcast? Because
yeah.
I'm gonna say that might be the latest we or you have waited to do that.
Yeah, me. Yeah.
I was thinking, well, we might. Could we actually have a fuck-free podcast? No, now I did it too. There you go. So, yeah. I have known that to a certain extent. Like, basically, without getting too bogged down in the comic book stuff, I do know that this character was ostensibly a fairly minor player in the overall Marvel universe, or even in the X universe, beyond what you just mentioned about him being the catalyst for a major storyline. And correct me if I'm wrong. I think I read this somewhere. He's the cousin of Professor X. Is that the relation? Isn't he related?
No, he's the actual son of Professor X.
Oh, he's his son?
Yeah. Yeah. That's, yeah.
Well, then he should be a much bigger deal. What the hell?
Yeah. But
oh, no wonder he's got mental issues. No, anyway. because we haven't given them their proper dues as of yet, couple of the actors I want to single out in this production. First and foremost, our lead, who I don't know, maybe just by losing maybe 5 or 10 pounds and changing his hair, he's almost unrecognizable most of the time. It's Dan Stevens, who, you know, some folks who listen to this podcast might recognize from Downton Abbey as Matthew Crawley. I'm stopping myself. He's really something in this. I really enjoyed his performance a lot. You know, the madness of it and the frustration of it. And you know what? If they wanted to, they could have played up more of the comic elements, and they comic as in comedy, not comic as in comic book. But they kind of did restrain themselves a little bit. I mean, the whole business of him being transferred into her body and all that thing, they probably could have had a little bit more fun with that if they wanted. I mean, you know, the whole feeling himself up and kind of.
But, I was really impressed with what we saw from him. I mean, I remember when he left Downton Abbey on purpose so he could go, like, do other things. I'm sure he got a little flack for it, but this is just like, oh, okay, the dude can act. And I'm sure this has to be more rewarding than just playing, like, you know, good-looking heartthrob guy. He's definitely, I mean, I just hope he's having a good old time doing this.
Yeah, I know he did at least one movie that I've heard he's actually very, very good in. I've not gotten around to seeing it myself. Kind of a really tense action thriller kind of thing. He might even be the bad guy. I don't remember. I'm sure someone will probably know what we're talking about and point it out on our Facebook thread or something. But I've heard that he's actually been good in other things. But this was exceptional. And speaking of exceptional, and going back to our Fargo love, oh my gosh. What's her name? The actress who plays Syd Barrett, Rachel Keller. And we recognize her. She was on season 2 of Fargo. She played Simone, the little Spitfire kind of daughter of Dodd. This, watching her in this episode, I was thinking, you know, it's kind of like when you see a movie and you see someone for the first time going, oh, they're going to be something. They're going to be a star. I thought this could have that effect for her. I mean, I don't know if she'll be like a big star, but she's definitely going to get a heck of a lot more notice for this than even her role on Fargo, because Fargo, there were so many crazy, outsized, amazing performances. She kind of got lost in them because, you know, when you start reeling off all the memorable actors and performances at season 2, she might not come up in your top 5 or 6. There's just so much. No. But here, wow.
Yeah, it definitely looks like Holly must have found that she was good to work with and saw something in her, and then, you know, gave her a chance and bumped her up a little bit. And it definitely looks like it's going to pay off in a good way here, because you know, pretty much as soon as she, you know, came on the screen, there was just some kind of magnetism there in this pilot, where I'm just like, oh, this is interesting, and this is not, you know, anything like what we've seen the actress play before, which is always nice to see.
Oh yeah, I mean, this character compared to what she did on Fargo alone, I mean, I know that's a very limited, that's a very small sample for comparison purposes, but hey, very, very different. And just, And the interesting thing about playing a character who doesn't want to be touched and can't be touched, and
Oh.
we discover why is, and that reminds me, like, isn't there there's another X-Men character who has an issue like that, isn't there?
Yeah, Rogue.
Rogue is the one I always think of. Like, oh, you can't know. Oh, she can never feel a person's touch and blah blah blah. Boo hoo.
But I, by the end of the episode, I was almost laughing out loud just because, I mean, David just keeps trying to kiss her like all the time, like over and over and over again. He's just trying to like lean in for a kiss at the worst time. He was like, "Come on, dude, chill."
He reminds us of like when you're, you know, that point in your life when you're, you know, you got that crush on someone. It's like, no, we're just gonna be friends. Like, oh yeah, I can deal with that. And you keep trying to still stage things for that moment where maybe you can do something. And they always are always like, hey, you don't remember, we said we're just gonna be friends, right? It's like, oh yeah. So why are you lowering the lights? Oh, it's just bright, that's all. Anyway. So throughout this episode, there's a lot of interesting little I don't think they're real. I wouldn't really call them Easter eggs exactly, but there's these little details, and I feel like this is the kind of thing that people might watch this episode more than once to study the way they do other shows, like Westworld, I guess, but you know, but better shows as well. Like when he has that episode, which I think might have been one of the things that led to him being committed, and we get that flashback of him in the kitchen. And all everything just, you know, bursting and exploding from all the drawers and cabinets all around them and whatever, and everything. And then you see he sees that weird, evil, blobby, globby-like creature in the corner, kind of leering at him. And I don't know if that's something that's it's referencing something from the comics or not. I almost don't want to know. It's just, but it was creepy as all hell, I thought. Did you notice that at the very towards the end, before he's about to shake Jean Smart, the Fargo person's hand, in the background, in the shadows by the rocks, that creature is there and then it's not?
Yeah, that was really creepy.
I did rewind, even though the show hadn't ended. I rewound back to make sure. Did I just hallucinate that myself? Because I started thinking maybe I'm this character now because I'm seeing things that aren't there. Like, no, that's there, and no one seems to be aware of it. What the hell is going on here? So I really enjoy, I love stuff like that. It kind of goes to a lot of shows that we like, not just current, but even you go into, you know, our distant past. You know, I know like you're a big Twin Peaks fan,
Yeah.
and stuff like that always makes you go, oh, it's very Twin Peaksian, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's definitely the kind of bizarre shit that they like to put in Lynch type stuff. So hopefully they'll continue to do
Oh, I think the show is having an effect on your audio. I think it's starting to cause you to break up a little bit there. So apologies
Yeah,
to
I got
anyone.
a weird. My throat's kind of weird. That's what happened to me there. I got a little bit of a cold, so it just kind of
Oh,
scratched there.
you kind of, it's not like you became a malfunctioning Cylon or something. Geeky reference. Oh, speaking of geeky references, because you wouldn't have caught it because you didn't watch the show, but they definitely, there's one part in this episode. They definitely decided to go a little Stranger Things for the fans by having the character not only wolf down waffles, which is the special thing in Stranger Things, but also the music for that part of the episode sounds very much like a lot of the music scored for Stranger Things. It's got that late 70s, early 80s eerie synth kind of quality, which they don't use throughout the show. But definitely for a certain part of the show. That's when I say it starts becoming that little bit of that 70s paranoid thriller kind of a feel to it. So that's probably what they're using it for.
Well, hell, if I would have known Stranger Things was properly respecting delicious waffles, I probably would have watched it already. I'll have to pop
Oh,
her on
that's
the list.
right. I told, yeah, she's obsessed with character is obsessed with waffles. But frozen waffles, so don't get too excited. But
Oh.
I like Eggo, so it's okay. They do for Eggo waffles what like ET did for Reese's Pieces way back when, which is actually what it's supposed to be referencing. But that's for a different. And anyone who really likes Stranger Things, go back through our archives and find the Stranger Things podcast. It's a good one. But back to this. Another thing, I couldn't tell if this was deliberately done. Just to, well, I mean, everything in the show is deliberately done. That's a stupid comment to make from the get-go. But when they're in the psychiatrist's office, there is this photograph behind a psychiatrist. It was such a weird choice to be in a psychiatrist because it's like a blurry picture of someone screaming. I kept thinking that should be the last thing that should be in a psychiatrist. You shouldn't have someone screaming. It shouldn't be blurry. The whole thing, it's unsettling. Why would you have your patient sitting across from you, across from a very unsettling picture? Lecter wouldn't do that in his office. What are you doing? I thought that's very strange. Okay. So, suffice to say, obviously we both really enjoyed it. Was there anything else that really stood out for you or intrigued you about the episode? I know weeks ago you mentioned you were excited that Aubrey Plaza was going to be in the show, and I haven't seen her in too many things outside of Parks and Rec, so I found her very interesting in this one.
It's definitely nice to see her playing, a different character than what we, it's just nice when there's actors and actresses that we enjoy their work, that they don't seem to be getting typecast, that they just are getting the chance to do some, odd stuff. Not that she was super normal on Parks and Recreation, but this is definitely a different direction.
This is what could have happened to her character in Parks and Rec if maybe she never met Chris Pratt's character or something. Where she might have ended up. I don't now. Since I feel that by the end of the episode, we're fairly sure that what we're going to see for the most part is quote unquote real. So now it seems like a lot of the show is going to be about, who these people are that have come to rescue them, and how that's going to play out. Does he become part of their quote unquote team or whatever it might be? And who are these people who are after him? And what's the end game with all these things? But beyond that, I don't know if there's anything that if there's a kind of show that would necessarily lend itself to, wacky theories the way, like Westworld or Lost or would. It kind of reminds me, maybe it's more maybe in sync with Mr. Robot, perhaps a little bit in that sense, where it's the unreli the potentially unreliable narrator situation, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be, some stuff to speculate on, and as we try to figure out, like, who, what this agency is, and, what the goofy, mushy looking, yellow-eyed figure is, things like that, but they're not like, crazy. I don't know. I mean, who knows what they could do with it.
I like that. I'm genuinely not sure. So, which means it's not. I can't take for granted what's going to happen. And they did something smart, which a few other shows do. Although we enjoy when we talk about TV shows when they have interesting titles. Well, both seasons of Fargo have very interesting titles for all their episodes. I believe for this show, the titles are just basically chapter one, chapter two. I think that they don't think they give anything away in the titles whatsoever. So that which is smart, they're playing it very close to the vest. So I like that we don't quite know what to expect, other than shit. Looks like it's gonna be pretty good. I think the person who's gonna be doing a lot of the future directing on the show and one of the creative forces behind this is what's his name? Michael Uppendahl,
Oh,
who
good.
we know from we should love that guy because not only did he work on he worked on Fargo, I believe. He's also an old Mad Men director, if I'm not mistaken. So he's one of those. I think he's one of those go-to quality, high caliber TV director dudes. So
Yeah,
that's
one thing, yeah.
go on.
Something that I really liked about this is that they don't lean on like the fact that it's like a Marvel comic thing or an X-Men thing. I mean, it barely plays any role like in the episode at all. I mean, there's an X in the title credits, which I don't think which doesn't matter that much, but I mean they barely reference mutants at all, and when this team of who knows whatever shows up to help him escape from the wherever he's being held by those agents of who knows what. I mean, they break him out, and they don't like it's just like matter of fact, they're breaking him out. This one guy can like throw people all over the place, and they don't like focus on that. They're just like, okay, this is how it is, don't freaking
Oh,
they're
how wonderful was that one of the what might be one of the only action sequences in the entire episode think it is action, the more I think about it, like genuine action. It's done fairly quickly, and it's pretty much all one shot. I think it's virtually entirely a single shot, and it's like what you said, it's not focused on. It's like almost nonchalant that this guy, one of the guys who's doing it, is just, he's just waving his hand and people are flying out of the
Right. Yeah, it's just different than what we're used to seeing from anything related to comics at all. They're just kind of it's just part of the background instead of a foreground.
It
Very
feels
profound
it,
of me.
yeah, it feels like it's more of a casual connection, and they're not, and it's exactly what you just said. They're not leaning on it. I mean, obviously, if it's on FX and it's part of the X-Men universe, then it's not part of that whole Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is also what the show's on Netflix, which feel the need to keep making references to the Avengers or the big green guy or whatever all the time. Or they do that on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. too. And sometimes it works. When they do it on Luke Cage a couple times, it actually makes sense. I love the idea that people are selling like bootleg videos where people had, video cam like the aliens fighting the Avengers in New York City. That it's like, well, yeah, I could see that actually happening. But when other references always feel very forced to me. So you're
Yeah,
right.
it's so nice that they didn't need to the studio didn't make him have Cyclops or somebody show up. It's just really, really nice that they just didn't make him do that once in the first time fucking ever.
I think something you said early in the podcast really is at the core of all this, is that I haven't read any articles to know the real basis of how the show came to be. So I'm just doing pure guesswork here, which could be totally wrong. So apologies if I'm just pulling something out of my ass, which should stay in there. Ew. Anyway, I feel that it's because it's Noah Hawley, and he kind of was, I wouldn't say he has total carte blanche, but he probably just said, yeah, I wouldn't mind doing something. Let me pick this one. This really practically minor or insignificant character. It's not like you're doing a show about Wolverine or Cyclops or something like that, And the deal was, let me take this one and run with it, because you guys aren't going to be using him, right? Right? Okay, it's too, you would have used him by this point. But I don't need to be paying attention to any of that other stuff. This is going to be just my own thing. And it pretty much, I'm pretty sure that's what this is going to be. I don't think this really has any connection to even any of the X-Men movies or anything, regardless of it being part of the same comic company that has those rights. I think this is going to be its own thing by itself and not really reference anything. I'd be really surprised if it ever referenced anything else,
Yeah,
really.
agreed.
Anyway, and I don't need it to. I mean,
No.
of course, I'm not an X-Men fan, so I could care
Yeah,
less.
I've never been a huge X-Men fan either, so I don't, it's not necessary.
All right. That was, I'm glad that you came to me with the idea of, like, do you want to do a quick podcast after the show is over? And I was really originally like, no. And then I was like, oh, okay, I'm hearing it might be good. All right. And then then I was like, now I'm like, I want to record. I want to record. I'm so excited. We've been covering, four of the more, let's say, traditional superhero shows on the pretty much the weekly podcast that we've been doing with our fellow STVD All-Star Squad there for the past several months. I will say that after just watching this pilot, I'm really glad that we didn't try to lump this into that podcast.
Oh,
I mean, for those of you, I mean, there's a lot of you who probably will not listen to that podcast because you don't care about the CWDC shows. Understandable. That sucker is already overstuffed as is. We're ha I'm happy when we only come in at only 1 hour and 45 minutes on that one, with, four shows and five people and other craziness. But this, based on this one episode, this kind of feels like a single episode podcast worthy kind of show.
yeah.
So I'm
We'll have to
thinking
see how life.
we might try. I
Yeah.
think we'll be in that. We don't want to guarantee it because, life can take a turn, but it's tempting, especially because we know that Better Call Saul, which was going to be our next single episode podcast like we have done in the previous years, that doesn't come back till April 10th. I believe this show will be over by then because I think it's only eight
Yeah.
episodes.
Yeah, I believe you are right. So I guess it might fill in a gap and help keep our skills fresh for when that comes back.
Yeah, so we're not relying on like those other yokels that we have on the other podcast. So it's more on us.
Right.
All right.
Speaking of crutches.
Crutches.
I can just before we let you wrap it up, but I can honestly say after one episode of this that I'm presumably this did delay Fargo coming back a little bit, because you know you can only have so much time to work on stuff. But
right.
If it did delay Fargo's return after a long hiatus, I think it's worth it.
I agree. I mean, I'm not going to say that by the time this is over, I think I will like it quite as much as Fargo, because. Only
Right.
because Fargo is my current favorite show on TV, so that's not me knocking a show. It's just like I don't think you'll surpass my favorite show, but based on what we saw here, I mean, hopefully, again, this pilot was so wonderfully done. I don't expect the regular episodes to be quite that trippy or good, but. If it's at least maintains a certain level of quality, and we get to see more of these actors and these storylines play out, and we get, I mean, I didn't talk about a lot of the character names because we didn't actually hear most of the character names in this episode. I read it somewhere else. Much like the Fargo series, you're going to have characters who have delightful names, just ridiculous names. I mean, Sid Barrett cracks me up because that's the guy, you know, it's like, what's the guy from Pink Floyd from the early era? But there's going to be, I think we'll save referencing those other names till we get to those episodes where we actually hear them said out loud. But
yeah.
Although I do like the fact that the guy, the interrogator, he's just the interrogator. I did look up that. And the guy with the weird eye who's like, you know, lurking around him, his name is actually The Eye. I was like, okay, that makes it simpler when you're writing that script, doesn't it? You know? Okay, so if you enjoyed this podcast, you will probably enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. You can look us up on Facebook, we're the Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can like the page and join the conversation about any number of TV shows and other matters we talk about there. You can also find us on iTunes the very same way. Type in the Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us. And finally, you can also follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. That's STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. So that's, I think we should call it a wrap. A miracle that we're finishing this fast, but I'm really excited about this one, and hopefully the people out there watching were excited too.
Yeah, hopefully everybody enjoyed the show and enjoyed our not too incoherent rambling about it.
Yeah, no, we watched this show, and we didn't make you wait several weeks for a podcast about it with 8,000 edits to it, like some other people we know. We're kidding, we love them. Anyway... On that snarky note, I'm going to say goodnight.
Okay, goodnight, Scott.